Blog Talk Radio.
Until the philosophy which old one race superior.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You sumbitches, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power. Thank you all for the rescheduling of this show from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Thanks for everybody for tuning in to tonight's show. Tonight, we really have an exciting show. Tonight will be definitely a great night for people to call in to ask as many questions as they need to, because this is a very, very important hour to form this discussion upon what's going on. So I'm pretty much waiting on key guests to call in, so if we could possibly have them to call in right now, that would be great. Upon this very, very hour, we need to discuss what's going on with the particular case of a African immigrant black woman and her charges against the Dominique. That has to be really talked about. And I really want the details to be put out, and I really want to just bust on what exactly is going on, but it's best to, you know, for folk to tell their own story. They have a story. At any rate, I'm going to go ahead and take a call. We have 973-592 on Black Power Radio. You're on Black Power Radio. Hello? Okay, I guess that person hung up. At any rate, we're waiting on the guest to call in. But at first, we definitely need to discuss the laws, number one, upon HIV and how that definitely has to be talked about outing people, about not knowing the statuses. And if I remember correctly, there, you know, that's why they have laws about privacy matters, about how we shouldn't release those kinds of information, because we don't know who has it or who doesn't have it. If it had been a white person, that wouldn't have been released. And then the whole theory of the rape, definitely has to be discussed upon raping people. That has to be discussed. All that really has to go into play. We must get that information out there about what our laws are as follows. Was the law actually broken? We need to know that. We need to know exactly more about this situation, about the when things go wrong, will people be exposed? Would this have been the same way if this were a white woman? Would it have been exposed you know, had a person allegedly did this that was white. This happened to a white victim. Would her information be out there? With the not only that, but would any of this information, would we know anything if this were, would this been swept up under the rug? Like in most cases, we generally look at things differently when it's done to us. When it's always a, when it's a white woman, her rights are clearly protected. The white woman is always a victim. In most cases, the moment that something happens to us, you know, we don't even know if this young lady has the HIV status. We don't even know that. What goes on to it, I mean, why, you know, and then the bigger thing is the fact that, you know, she was allegedly sodomized, sexually abused. Is this a normal incident that would be exposed if it were a white woman? That we must discuss. That is something that we have to really put out there. Hold on 1 second. I have to make sure that my guests are on here because I'm not going to ramble on. I want to get straight into this. So I need everybody to hold on a second. You're on Black Power Radio. Black Power Queen.
Yeah, Black Power. Black Power.
Yes, ma'am. Black Power. I need you to really give a basic information about this case and kind of break down a little bit, and then we will start these questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you for having me on tonight.
No problem.
What happened was that on May 14th, there's a sister from Guinea, West Africa, who is a maid at the Soft Kalel Hotel in Manhattan, New York. And she was cleaning a room, a suite, 2806. And allegedly, Dominic Strauss-Kahn, who is the former head of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, came out of the bathroom naked and attacked her. He forced her to, you know, do oral sex on him. He grabbed her, slammed her to the ground, tore a ligament in her shoulder. She has a hematoma, which is a black and blue mark on her vagina. He grabbed her breast, tore her stockings, and forced her to perform oral sex on him. After that, he went and had lunch with his daughter and then proceeded to get on a plane to Paris. At which point he was, you know, escorted off the plane and arrested. He was picked out in a lineup where the sister picked him out, and he was, you know, ultimately indicted.
Right.
What has happened is that the sister allegedly has credibility issues. She is from Guinea. They said that she lied on her income tax application, and that she lied in her asylum application, and that there was inconsistencies in her story. Like no one has ever lied before, and no one is, you know, no one is perfect. But you know, whatever my position is, whatever happened, whatever she's done, whatever inconsistency she may have said or told,
exactly.
That has nothing to do with the DNA evidence, which is his semen all over her uniform. That has one thing has nothing to do with the other. And what has recently happened was that when he was arrested, he was placed on house arrest. First of all, he was in Rikers Island in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a nice little bail package where he was released from Rikers Island and put on house arrest in a nice plush townhouse in Tribeca, New York, where he was on house arrest until July 1st. And on July 1st, his house arrest was lifted. He was released on his own recognizance. He's been given the freedom to travel throughout the country.
Mm.
His bail and his bond has been returned to him. His $1 billion bail and his $5 million bond has been returned to him. And, his passport has not been returned to him, but he's free to travel throughout the country, and he is supposed to report back to court on July 18th.
Okay.
And this is all based allegedly on a 3-page letter that the prosecutor submitted to the Dominic Strauss-Kahn's defense team, which legally I presume he's supposed to do that. If the prosecutor sees any kind of inconsistency, they're supposed to, submit that. I guess if not, they could be charged with prosecutorial misconduct. So I guess that's what they call themselves doing. And based on that 3-page letter with those inconsistencies and those alleged lies that she told about her asylum and income tax and a lot of other stuff, they lifted his house arrest. And so when I heard about that on July 1st, they had a press conference. Kenneth Thompson, who is the lawyer, he's the brother lawyer, I might add,
okay.
for the maid, he laid out her whole case about what happened to her and, how she was treated by prosecutors when she went to sit with them and tell them their story. And when I heard about that, I said to myself, you know what? I said, this cracker's probably going to walk because he's white, he's rich, and
he's an IMF head.
Yeah, he was the former head of the IMF, and he's white and he's rich. So, I said, he's probably going to get off. So after I heard about that, I said, I'm going to call this lawyer. I'll see if I can call the lawyer. So right after the press conference, I called the lawyer. And that was a bad weekend because that was the 4th of July weekend. So,
okay.
But I said, I'll just leave a message on the voicemail. So when he come in Tuesday, he'll have a nice little message waiting for him. So I called Friday evening, called Saturday, called Tuesday when everyone came back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the secretary answered the phone. I told who I was, told what organization I was from. So I'm from the United Front Women's Ministry. I said, I'd like to speak with Kenneth Thompson. And she said, what is this in reference to? And I told her, I said, we want to support him and his client. So when she and Dominic Strauss-Kahn go back to court on July 18th, we want to be there in support of her because we feel that she needs a lot of support. And he was like, the secretary was like, well, I don't know if you're going to be able to speak with him because he's very busy. I said, well, I need to speak with him as soon as possible. I said, and if I can't speak with him, I said, I'll just come down to the office. So she said, we don't accept walk-ins. I said, well, it's either one or the other. I said, I will either come down there or you will, just could you please give him the message and tell him to call me. So about 2-3 hours later, he calls me. So the phone rings. I said, hello. He said, is this Khadija? And I said, yes. And he said, this is Ken Thompson. He said, this is the attorney for the maid that, was the victim of the alleged sexual assault. So I told him, I told him again who I was. And I said, listen, we want to support you and your client, but we don't want to do anything that may jeopardize the case. So
mm-hmm.
We want to know what you want us to do. What do you need us to do? What we want to do is we want to go down to the courthouse July 18th when he has to go back. And we want to be there for her if she goes back on July 18th. And he then told me, he said, Dominic Strauss-Kahn will not be going back to court on July 18th because they're going to drop the case this week.
Wow.
And I'm like, they're going to drop the case? I said, how do you know they're going to drop the case? He said, I'm telling you, they're going to drop the case this week. And he said, also, the New York Post called her a prostitute, and I have filed a libel suit against the New York Post for that. He said, so I said, well, what is it that you need us to do? I said, we got to do something. He said, if you want to do something, he said, call the DA's office.
I'm sorry. I just got to ask this question again. Mm. Now, could you please tell the listening audience again what her job description was? I mean, what her title was, so to speak?
She was a maid in a hotel.
Okay.
In Manhattan.
Okay. So that wasn't a prostitute. Okay. That's all I want you to clarify that real quick before
right.
you go into it.
Yeah. She's a maid. She's a maid in the
right.
hotel.
Right.
And but the New York Post, you know, wrote a they wrote a very nasty article about her. I think it was Saturday, July 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they said she was a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And so he told me, he said if you want to do anything, he said call the DA's office and, you know, go down to the DA's office. And I was like, I said, okay. He said, listen, I got to go. So that was the end of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was, after I spoke with him, I started calling the DA's office on my own, and I started texting people and telling people, you know, just giving them a little briefing of what, you know, the case was about, which is public knowledge because it's on the news. And I was telling people, I said, call the DA's office and demand that they do not drop the charges and that they push the case
mm-hmm.
to court,
mm-hmm.
you know, and because, you know, this sister is a victim. And
exactly.
whatever she did in the past, one thing ain't got nothing to do with the DNA evidence
exactly.
that's all over her uniform. So I said, so I was calling, I put texts out, I put it on Facebook and stuff like that, but I felt in my spirit that that was not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was, there's a brother, friend of mine here in Brooklyn who's a tailor. You know, I buy African stuff from, he's from Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he tailors my clothes and stuff like that. So I reached out to the brother. I said, Giella, look, I said, I need you to rally up your people, and they need to call this brother here. He keeps his TV on in his shop. He keeps it on CNN. He don't put it on nothing else. Every time I go in there, he got it on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, brother, I said, I know you know about what happened to your sister and our sister back in Guinea. He said, yeah, I know. He said, I know her. I said, oh? He said, yeah, I know her. I said, well, what I need you to do, I need you to rally up the Guinean community, and I need them to call the DA's office and to I need them to call the DA's office and demand that the case, that the charges against this man is not dropped and that the case goes to trial
mm-hmm.
and that they should not prejudice this, you know, this sister. So he said, sure, I'm going to do that. Next thing I know, you know, a couple of people from the Guinean community were calling me because the Guinean community have their own radio program
mm-hmm.
and they called me and they asked me if I would come on the show and explain to them, you know, what I wanted to do and, you know, what our plan was. So, you know, on Friday,
mm-hmm.
what happened was that on Friday, Amadou Diallo's mother called, Katiatou Diallo. She called me, and her and her husband apparently have a radio program, so
mm-hmm.
they asked me if I would come on. So I said, sure, I would come on. So I came on, and I explained to, you know, very briefly about what we wanted to do, and, you know, what our plan was. And then on Saturday, another a person from another aspect of the Guinean community called me and asked me if I would come on. So that's when I brought in our chairman, Malik Zulu Shabazz, and him and I were on that show for 3 hours on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And we laid the whole case out. Now, the program is in Fulani, sometimes in French and in English. So they introduced me, and I told the whole, you know, laid the whole case out and told them what I wanted to do, well, you know, what I think that we should do. And I think that the whole African community, I don't care if you're from Guinea or you're from Nigeria or whatever, the sister needs support. And that's basically, the, you know, what we put out, that the sister needs support. And that, and I told them that, I said, you can call the DA's office. You don't have to worry about, because I know that, to be very, very straight up with you, a lot of our brothers and sisters from the continent, I think, feel self-conscious about their accent.
Exactly.
And about their English. I told them, I said, if you call the DA's office, I said, even if you tell them in French or Fulani, you know, what your demand is, I said, don't call there asking. You call there and you demand that the case is dropped, that the case is not dropped, and that, you know, that the case goes to court. So that's what I did, and I've been telling them to call, and hopefully they, you know, that they've been calling.
Well, Quinn,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt
yeah.
because you're so passionate in what you're saying, and I feel bad, but I have to, because this, again, I want you to do the same techniques, the tools that you did for the other radio show, because really this is a very serious matter. It's not just the fact that she's an immigrant. It's not just the fact that, you know, that we are affected because we are a black women or Africans, et cetera. We still are women. We still experience the same color, you know, we're just from a different continent. So this affects us strongly, and this is something that, you know, happens on a daily. you know, the whole thought of rape and the whole fact of someone else doing it and, you know, getting away with it. So we have to expose it. So I really want you to tell people right now, or if you can, once you finish your thought, I just want you to be on call to just break down, like, the demands. Just lay it out the same way. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'll be quiet. I'll let you do what you need to do. But I just need you to put that out there because a lot of people don't know how to organize and what to do in these cases because this is something that could be affecting someone else now. They're just quiet about it, you know?
That's true. Yeah. Well,
one more thing. Do we have is that other person calling in? And can you tell me the area code?
I don't know. Well, she could be calling in from a 240 area code. The other person could be calling in from a 240 area code. That's Katiasu Giallo. She said that she would call in. So if she is calling in, it would be a 240 area code.
Okay. Okay. I'll look out for that. Okay. Go ahead, Queen. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So that's basically, you know, I wanted to really rally the Guinean community to call. And, you know, when I got on their program, I told them, I said, especially on Saturday, because Friday I kind of like tiptoed a little bit, but Saturday, I think that since I had like 3 hours, I just ripped loose. And I told myself, listen, we're a strong African nation. I said, a lot of us, we break our neck to try to come to this country. And when we take the citizenship, we raise our hand and take the citizenship pledge, whatever it is that our sisters, our brothers and sisters from the continent take to come over here, they really need to understand what the Constitution is for what it's worth. I mean, you might as well use it to your advantage while you're here. And the First Amendment gives you the right to stand up and resist and say no. You have a right to a peaceful assembly. You have a right to address a grievance. And this is one of the things that, you know, that I laid out, you know, for our brothers and sisters who didn't know what to do, because I wasn't hearing anything, to be honest with you, from the Guinean community. In fact, I wasn't hearing anything from anybody. And so at first I had to really, like, check myself, and I said, maybe I'm the one that's being too emotional here. Maybe I'm the one that's taking this thing too far. And then, but I've learned over the past year and a half not to, especially with different experiences I've gone through, not to undermine my intuition or not to undermine that inner prodding and nudging that we get from within. I've learned not to do that. So I said, no, it's not. I'm not going to undermine that. I'm going to go forth with that. So I was just telling people, I said, you have a right to call the DA's office and tell them, you know, not to demand. I said, don't call there asking, because to be straight honest with you, a lot of our people from the continent, they don't know how to proceed when they're dealing with the white man, if I may say that, because I don't know no other way how to say it. They don't know how to proceed when they're dealing with the white man, so sometimes they're kind of like timid, or they be so self-conscious about their action or their English. So I just tell them, I said, in this country you have a right to say whatever you want. You know, that's part of the Constitution. I said, if you're English, you feel self-conscious about your English, I said, just speak in Fulani. Speak in French, but just call them. I said, it should be to a point where the DA's office mailbox is so full that they can't accept any more messages. I said, that's how it should be. They should be hearing from the Guinean community. And so that's basically, I just told them, I said, yeah. So a lot of people called in, and they seemed like they was very excited. This one brother called in and said, oh, you have put the fire of the, you know, how did he put it? I like the expression. He said, you have put the fire in our belly now. And I said to myself, that's what we want to do. We want to put the fire in the belly. I think that they already have it, but sometimes it needs to be brought out. You know, sometimes it has to be like a little stimulated. So that's, you know, that's what I told them. I said, look, I said, this sister, they dropped the charge. They're planning on dropping the charges based on some alleged things that she may have said, and they're trying to make her, they're trying to blame her for the dismissal of the charges, and she's the victim. So
exactly.
I thought it's something about that's not right, that doesn't feel right. I said, I mean, this person, I mean, I don't want to say what I really want to say, but this person is charged with criminal sexual act in the first degree. He got first, and he has a first count and a second count of that. He has a third count of an attempt to commit the crime of rape in the first degree. He has a fourth count of sexual abuse in the first degree. He has unlawful imprisonment in the second degree. He's got sexual abuse in the third degree and forcible touching. He's got seven counts on him. Now, with these seven counts, there's no way, especially toppled with the fact that there's DNA evidence all over her uniform,
exactly,
because he forced her to commit, he forced her
you know what?
Into oral sex, and she put the sperm all out of her, come on, really.
That's crazy.
You know?
But here's another issue, Queen, that needs to be addressed as well. The whole fact that they trying to demonize her on the terms of trying to say, imply that she has HIV status and release where she lived, allegedly lived at, and all that kind of stuff needs to be exposed, too, because that's against the law. If she had it or didn't have it, that's not supposed, no one's HIV status, whether it's positive or negative, is not supposed to be released. That's why when you go and have that test done, they do it anonymously. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? So that's
right.
Something that should be talked about as well. I don't know if you all brought that point up. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I didn't know about that. Another sister had brought that to my attention, but I'm going to research that and bring that up as well, because if that's the case, then, I mean,
they release what housing, basically, like what housing, because of the fact that they imply, because of the fact that the housing that she stayed in, like somebody, not, she stays with her sister or someone else, basically
mm-hmm.
it was to the level of whether or not someone in the household has to have it in order to stay in this program. But that's not saying that she has it, but the point is that was released.
Right,
and
right.
That's illegal. They cannot do that, you know.
Right, because what they're trying to do.
Tune in, everybody. We're trying to get this call met. We're trying to make sure that this sister gets on this line, because this is an important issue. It's not just on the topic of the whole Privacy
yeah.
Act and then making a victim feel like a criminal, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, in clear pace, and, you know, the rape in the aspect of the HIV alleged status.
Yeah, I have to research that, because I did read in the newspaper where they said that she had allegedly lied about something about her housing, so she can keep her housing, because they said she has a house in the Bronx. That's how they put it in the post, that she has a house in the Bronx and that she had lied so she can keep the housing. So I'm thinking, what kind of housing is it? I didn't know about another sister did mention about the HIV thing, but I have to research that further to find out, you know, what's really going on. So what we did was we told the Ghanaian community that we want them, that what we were planning on doing,
mm-hmm.
which is this coming Thursday the 14th, you know, we're going to descend on the DA's office at 1 Hogan Place in New York City at 12 noon, at the height of when they're going to get their sandwiches and their potato chips for lunch. We're going to be out there, and we're going to demand, you know, to the DA that the case is not dropped and that they push the case to trial. You know, and that, you know, how one thing has nothing to do with the other. And then at 6 p.m., we will go to the plush townhouse of Dominique Strauss-Kahn at 153 Franklin Street. We will go there while he's having dinner, whatever he's doing, if he is there. We will go there, and we will demonstrate in front of his place. So this is what we're planning on doing. So far, we have the support of Kadiatou Diallo, which is the mother of assassinated Amadou Diallo, who was shot here in 1999, 40 shots.
That's another thing that we need to talk about, Susan, before you go into detail
yeah.
about who, because that is another case. That, again, goes back to the police brutality, police excessive force. I mean, that wasn't even excessive force, because you didn't even know whether or not he did it or not. So you didn't even
right.
give him time to make a case, you know,
mm-hmm.
to build his case. He didn't even go in front of a judge and a jury. You just assassinated this brother. So
yeah.
that's another thing that I would definitely like you to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then he was shot, what, 41 times? That
yeah,
is crazy, by 4 officers, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy. That's really, really crazy. So
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we have the support of his mom. You know, she's going to come. She said that she would come through and she would support and rally, you know, the rest of the Ghanaian community to come forth. So this is what we need. This is what we're trying to do for next Thursday, this coming Thursday, in fact, the 14th. You know, we want to, and they seem like, everyone seems like they're on board and that they're ready. I've been having, you know, a lot of people from the Ghanaian community have been calling me, and you know, and we're ready to go forth. You know, I just want them to, until Thursday, I want them to continue to call the DA's office and flood the DA's office, you know, with phone calls, you know, until we get down there on Thursday. Yeah, the phone number to the DA's office is 212-335-9000. Another thing that I wanted to add about the DA's office, that it is reported that somebody by the name of Daniel Alonzo in the DA's office is leaking out information about this sister, you know, which we feel, you know, we really need to take a look at. I mean, we know why they're doing it, but we really need to take a look as to what he's doing and what his methodology and why he's doing it. You know, he's leaking out what his purpose, what his intention is for, what his rationale is for leaking out information, you know, about her. You know, whether it's true or not, one, you know, like I said, one thing has nothing to do with the other.
That is totally against the law. That right there, when you once you start linking stuff out, that case is supposed to be like thrown out technically. Mm-hmm. Once you start leaking things, I mean, that is crazy within itself. But the key things about these two acts of violence and hurt and pain, well, both of them are immigrants. That's one
right.
of the things they need, and young lives. You know, this brother
right.
was 22 years old, you
mm-hmm.
know, when he was gunned down February 5th, 1999. That's
yes.
something by far, again, we have the same, think about this, and then what does this have in common? Again, this is police brutality, this is in where? New York City.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
well, a lot of police brutality is happening under these watches of these so-called mayors that aren't
right.
doing anything about it, you know.
That's
I know
correct.
That a lot of people have these citizen board review boards, but they aren't really doing anything because they're handcuffing the citizens and they're allowing the police to do what they need to do, what they feel like they need to do, and that's kill
mm-hmm.
us all. It's not going to be anybody left, you
yeah.
know, after
well, you
a
know
while.
What? Let me just say this. You know, I think that that the Civilian Complaint Review Board, the CCRB, for what it's worth, you know, I hear a lot of people say, like, oh, that ain't all. That's not really that good. But I feel that in terms of documentation,
exactly.
if not anything else, I think it's good for documentation because if it's a situation where, let's say, Lieutenant Police Officer Ortiz is up for promotion like in 2 or 3 years, and they look in the thing and they find it said police officer. They said, damn, P.O. Ortiz got like 5 complaints for excessive force. We better rethink this damn position that he may be, that he's applying for. So I think, you know, CCRB, it has its place. You know, I mean, we might as well use them for something. I don't know if they have them in different states, but I know they have them here in New York, and
I
think it's good.
Do. And that's the whole point. So if they have them there, I mean, what is actually going on? Because that's the whole point of them. They're being handcuffed in like all the other states. Because if they were used for what they're used for, then a lot of this excess force would not be technically going on. I mean, we know how this – don't get us wrong. We know how the system runs. We know how safe runs, et cetera. But the Citizens Board Review is supposed to be used for another methodology.
Right,
you know, which
right.
is not being met, you know.
Right.
So that definitely has to be exposed within this truth. I mean, who is actually running it? Are citizens running it, or is it actually the very police department? That needs to be said. So I would like maybe someone possibly from a citizens board review to call in to basically break down the steps in order of how they handle the situations. I know how they're supposed to handle the situations. I'm not necessarily blaming them because it's not
yeah.
real all their fault, but at the same time, I just really would like to know how it is actually ran. Then that way, you know, it could be twerked a little bit. But anyway, Queen, we do have some callers, and I would like for you to remain on the line. I know it is, you know, kind of late for most of us, but this is an
okay.
issue that we really need to get out. But we do have a caller on 562-239-8694. You're on Black Power Radio.
Black Power, Queen.
Black Power.
Black Power. Sister, I'm from here in Los Angeles. Sister, we are totally supportive. And thank you for giving the number out to the DA. I will be calling. I'm going to organize in Los Angeles. But, sister, you
yes,
know.
Sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. But, you know what, sister? When I hear these reports of this white boy and he and his rape, that's very natural for him, you know. I'm not excusing it. But if you do your history, he's a natural raper. He's a
right.
natural faggot. He's a natural raper. I mean, and of that dark woman, that has been going on forever. But like
right.
you say, United we stand. I'm going to definitely call in the morning. I got about 10 brothers I'm going to contact tonight to get, you know, make these phone calls. And I don't know. I'm just disgusted by the whole issue. But this is America. Let me put it like that.
Yeah.
That's America.
That's right.
White boy gonna walk.
Right.
That's how,
yes,
actually
ma'am.
How
like
they
you
achieve
said, right and rich? Say it again.
Right. Exactly.
Say it again. And you said his DNA is all over her uniform?
Yes.
Yeah, because what happened is that he made her perform oral sex on him. And of course, everything was, and when everything was finished, he spit, you know, the DNA out, you know. And, you know, so, I mean, you know, and the thing about it is that he willingly gave his DNA samples, you know,
is
like, you know,
lawyer?
He willingly. I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, I just had to ask this question. It's probably relevant to most people, but he did this, like, without his attorney present, or he just did this, or that we don't know.
Well, you know, like, of course, when someone is, you know, when someone is brought in or took, you know, spotted in a lineup, like when they picked out of a lineup, I think, you know, what it is, they say, okay, well, you know, give up your DNA samples, you know, and he willingly did that.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I'm not impressed by the fact that Dominic Strauss-Kahn, because a lot of people would argue and say, well, look, he willingly gave up his DNA evidence. Yeah, that's cool. He did that, but I'm not impressed by that because he did that knowing that he probably would get off. He's white, he's rich, and he's the presidential candidate in Paris, France. So he probably said, I'm going to get off anyway.
I'll give up my DNA,
so I don't care
because
I know I'm getting off. Mm-hmm.
Because let me ask you this. Even with your DNA, I mean, that's guilty right there. You said this sister was raped. You said she was assaulted. She was sodomized. All these things.
No, I didn't say she was sodomized. I said he forced her to perform oral sex. He slammed her down to the ground. First of all, he slammed her down to the ground. He grabbed her vagina, so she has a hematoma on her vagina. He tore her stockings. She has a torn ligament in her shoulder. He grabbed her breast. He pushed her down and he forced her to have oral sex. You know, he did that, and his DNA evidence proves that. And in this country, for what it's worth, DNA evidence is supposed to be the thing that prosecutes and convicts. So we have that now. So now what? We have that. So now what's the problem? Now that you want to dismiss the case?
Right here in Los Angeles. There was a guy who committed a rape 28 years ago. His DNA, for some reason, popped up, and they convicted his ass after 28 years on DNA evidence alone. This cracker
needs to die.
That's in all cases. That's how a lot of people have been freed based upon DNA. They have served that long list of time in prison. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, this cracker is convicted. I mean, there's nothing else to talk about. His DNA has told the whole story. And that sister was raped and brutally raped.
Well, actually, she was not raped. He almost raped her. He almost did rape her. So he's not charged with rape. He's charged with sexual abuse in the third degree, forcible touching, an attempt to commit the crime of rape in the first degree.
Yes, ma'am.
That's his charges, you know.
But there are different accounts to this. So the news media, it's not actually correct in a lot of that. They're, like, really running with this story and not actually giving the correct evidence because in some sites it did say she sodomized.
I read the newspaper where they said other charges, but I just saw the actual indictment online, which you can actually look at yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
you can actually see the indictment,
really,
and it says it lists all the charges, you know, that's on him.
Thank you so much, brother. We're gonna move
Queen,
to the next
caller. Queen, thank you. This is Los Angeles, California, calling. We love you, Queen, and we're supporting you. Black power.
Okay,
peace. Black power.
Okay, let's move on to the next person. We have 904-705. You're on Black Power Radio. Go ahead, caller. You're on Black Power Radio. Hello. We're going to move on to the next caller. I guess they're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have 214-431. You're on Black Power Radio.
Hey, Black Power Queens.
Black Power.
Call them to support the program, and also to say, you asked a question about the Citizen Review Board. And most of the citizen review boards, the one in Dallas, are appointed by the city council members, either the mayor or the manager would support. I mean, pick a team, and they will they'll pick their own teams to be the citizen review board. But here in Dallas,
well, the petition. I'm sorry, Brother Drew. I just got a question. I know you're not on the citizen review board, and I know you're not the councilman or the mayor or anything like that. However, I just want to, like, really break down that contradiction. How exactly is that a citizen review board when you are appointing the people?
Right. It's already a stag dick. That's what we're
saying.
We're petitioning them now that a citizen review board consists of citizens. That's not going to be biased already. So we are working on petitioning them on that end. Fight some hard down here, so we getting some progress done too. And as far as this guy who had thought of his sister, I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't set up all the way from the beginning, being that she was from another country, and he thought he could get away with it. It was almost, you know, some of these crackers got plans that we can't even see. Send her up to the groom. She ain't gonna say nothing. He might thought she wasn't gonna say nothing. So a lot of this stuff, you know, a lot of corruption all over the world. And, you know, and I'm going to call in also. I'm on the internet listening to you. And so I'm going to call in also and have our members call in also. I have the number. And we support the sisters. And I hope the cracker die. All right, sister. Black power.
Black power. On that note, black power to that brother. We're going to the next caller. I think we have somebody else. Okay. Let me see. Okay, here we go. We have 973-592. You're on Black Power Radio.
Yes, SOTEP family. Sister Khadija, this is Dashaun Farad.
Peace, brother.
Yes, SOTEP family. It's a pleasure to hear the both of you. But listen up. As always, I don't call to be long or long-winded. What I wanted to state, one, as a reporter covering this case, I wanted to mention first, on July 6th, which is maybe 5 days ago, less than a week ago, many people don't realize that a new allegation has come up, a new sexual assault investigation may be launched. There's a French journalist, a woman by the name of Christine Bonan. She accused Dominique Kahn of trying to rape her in 2002 at his apartment. Okay, but what I wanted to say two more things, and Sister Khadija, being in New York City, knows this. The New York Post from July 2nd to the 4th had, I believe, July 1st to the 3rd, or I know for 3 days straight, the New York Post, which is a very opinionated, biased newspaper, as some have argued, had accused the woman who was accusing Khan of the sexual assault. They accused her of being a hooker, prostitutes, et cetera, There were three writers from the New York Post that wrote such stories, as I said, for 3 days straight.
Right.
And
they're being sued.
Right. They're being sued. And, of course, I wanted to say, Khadija knows this, to the callers who are listening, there are two lawyers who are representing this sister. There's Kenneth Thompson, but also Jeffrey Shapiro, whose office I contacted the other day regarding this case. But there's a smear campaign in the media, as you had stated. Now, of course, they have been circulating rumors about her staying at a hotel with people or at a home for people who have HIV. Definitely, an apartment, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing about the New York Post, a representative from the New York Post by the name of Susie Halpin, she stated, and I quote, "We stand by reporting," in other words. There seems to be a media assault taking place against this woman. But what I wanted to say before, and I promise to be very brief.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, pardon me, I'm in kind of like my journalist commentator mode, but.
No, go ahead, brother.
This actually reminds me of, you know, for years, there's always been black women have been seen by white men for years, for centuries, as being sexually erotic, sex craze, et cetera, et cetera, and black women have always been paraded around by white men as being sexual eye candy, if you would. Okay.
Right.
In other words, any time a black woman was raped, and this took place during slavery, the woman was always made like it was her fault. Well, the black woman,
exactly,
she asked for it, she deserved it. This is a centuries old thing that white men in power have always abused black women.
Good point. Yeah.
Did you notice that? Have always abused. I'm talking about specifically during slavery. So with Shroud, now me personally, they're saying that, of course, that there's what investigators are saying is that, yes, his semen was found in her clothing, and other investigators were stating that it was evidence of an assault or forced sexual contact. Now,
right. That's right.
We should take that into consideration along with, once again, this white woman in France, a journalist, also saying that he tried to assault her or tried to rape her in 2002.
Right.
So we should just keep this in mind, that this is actually a centuries-old tradition of black women being assaulted and then being accused, being blamed for the assault.
Mm-hmm. But not only that, though, dear brother, the other issue goes in with taking advantage of an immigrant that's new to this country. That's another thing, that someone that, probably barely knows the laws.
Right. But you want to know the sad thing? Her being a so-called immigrant is actually what the press is using against her, because they're saying, well, this is what immigrants do. A lot of African and Asian women come to this country and they prostitute themselves to support
themselves. That's correct.
They're using that against her. Her being an immigrant, and if you notice, they're saying that she lied. It was confirmed that she lied to gain asylum, but in my judgment, a lot of people lie to get to America.
That's no
reason to throw it out, but I wanted to say lastly, Khadija is well aware of this. They're saying that she was on the phone with her boyfriend or some male acquaintance,
mm-hmm,
and at first they're saying that they tried to say, well, she was on the phone right after the incident had took place, saying, well, I'm about to get a lot of money. But this is my issue. How the article was written, the sources stated, and the exact words were, well, the accuser said something to the effect of. It wasn't an exact, in other words.
They said it was a digest of the conversation, which is really not.
They said that she spoke in her dialect, in her country's dialect, and they said, well, she said something to the effect.
You don't speak her language?
Right.
And you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So that's another issue.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So even if she did, you don't think about it. She could have said, she could have spoke after, you never know. She could have said to the man in prison, well, Khan tried to assault me, and, I'm going to take him to court for it, and we may get money from
exactly.
him. But they're trying to demonize this woman. Now, I can understand if you had an exact quote, but you can't say in media, in journalism, if I'm reporting a story, and we can even ask Attorney Malik Zulu-Shabazz that's in court, okay, if I'm up on the stand, I can't say to the person questioning me, well, Khadija said something to the effect that said that this is
court. Exactly.
Okay.
All the times, Brother Dashaun, since you're mentioning that, since you're in the media, this is one thing that I really want you, and I'm glad you called too. One of the things that I really need you to break down on the terms of journalism, like the whole thing of them mentioning where she may stay and mentioning her status and that kind of thing. I mean, break that down on the terms of journalism and how unethical that is.
Well, first, as always, you may have heard this before, the both of you and anyone listening. One, if I'm reporting a story as a journalist, okay,
mm-hmm,
I'm to remain impartial and go by the presumed facts at that time, in other words. Now, if I'm offering a commentary, a commentary, I'm allowed to be opinionated. There's a difference between commentators and reporters. I'm both. I'm a journalist, reporter, and a commentator, okay? If I'm doing an editorial, I can be opinionated. But if I'm doing an editorial and I'm opinionated, or if I'm reporting, if I mention your HIV status, that's a lawsuit. Now, I have a right as a journalist to say, she has been reported or allegedly.
Right.
Understand?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the language. You see, in journalism, you're taught, and even in law, you're taught that little words such as you know, it's little words that can actually get you sued. Okay?
That's right.
Now, what the New York Post does in papers like that, they refer to that as being yellow journalism. Yellow journalism is when you exaggerate things, when you outright lie. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of newspapers like that, a lot of conservative newspapers that are like that, that in Sister Khadija living in New York City, she's actually in the hot of newspapers like that that just outright that outright lie on people, okay? But as a journalist, if I'm doing a story, I have to use words such as allegedly, our sources said this, that, and the third.
Right.
But when you're quoting sources, you have to be careful because you have to do it in a way that you are not slandering someone. Okay?
I didn't even see alleged. I mean, to be honest with you, dear brother and sister, I didn't even see where it said alleged.
It didn't.
Right,
no, that's my point.
I haven't seen that.
You understand? They didn't say alleged.
Right.
They just flat out said, you understand? They didn't say alleged. They didn't say it was they didn't say it was reported. They just outright saying it. Well, she, you know, she may have AIDS. She may have HIV. She does. She's saying and do stuff like that because, one, like I said, as a reporter, once again, you can be sued for slander.
And you know what else that they did? They try to make, like, him seem sympathetic because they talked about how he was on, like, suicide watch. You know what I mean? To peer to, like, they did a straw man technique. You know what I mean? Like, as if, you know, he's, because he's worried about the whole HIV status thing. So, you know, he tried to commit suicide. So we have him on a watch so people will be empathetic to, you know, his situation. You know what I mean? That's another thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. But, you know, my thing is my thing is if you're going to come at someone, if you're going to come at her, make sure you come at, if you're going to criticize her credibility because of the confirmed lies that they said that she told, you know, lies that have been confirmed, okay, which in my judgment was not enough. Like, in other words, her lying about her to get asylum in America, that wasn't enough to weaken her credibility, okay? Fine. If you're going to criticize her for that, fine. But why don't you criticize the history, once again, of Khan, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the alleged rape, the corrupt things that he's done as the IMF director. We can get real petty and start talking about how his organization has been raping African countries for...
That's right. Talk about it. That's right. House
and
Ballard.
I'm talking about when you study Dominique Strauss-Kahn's history alone, that is enough to question his credibility. I'm talking about the stuff that he's done, that he has done as IMF. I'm talking about his history, even before IMF, the things that he had to do to get that position.
Here's the thing, that the Very Well newspaper exposed him, so now all of a sudden he's a man behind a cloth. You know what I mean? Now they're trying to make him like almost if he's like a priest or something.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? So he went from a demon to a priest. You know what I mean?
It's no telling. Okay, now you may have to, you know, him being a rich man, him being a rich white man in power. Okay, one might assert that, who knows? One might say you never know how many people he may have paid off. Don't forget when he was in the condition he was
in. But you know what though?
And Rikers Island? He had that cell to himself. It was like a big cell or something.
Exactly. Supposedly. Allegedly. Right.
No, I'm saying he had a whole tier to himself when he was locked down. He had a whole tier to himself.
That happened. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
That's because he's white and he's rich.
They're not even, they're trying to delay this until like August the 1st.
Well, I know that July 18th, they're supposed to be going back to court. And so far we haven't heard anything yet because they met. The district attorneys met with Dominic Strauss-Kahn's defense team, and when they came out, the press was out there, and they wasn't giving up no information about what the meeting was about. But we all know that this possible dismissal of the charges was put on the table. We know that was put out there, and of course, you know, just to cover their behind and for GP, they tried to get him to plead to a lesser charge, and of course, he was like, no, you know, Benjamin Brathman, one of his attorneys said, no, my client is not pleading to anything. So, you know, for the record, they put that out there. But we all know that the main thing they want to do is try to dismiss the case.
and no one has said anything about what's going on. Yeah, you know.
Right, but there, but you know, but we definitely do have to, unlike the so-called, you know, media that presented this information, we definitely want to present all the facts as much as we know, so to speak. And of course, we are entitled to do our opinion. This is like our radio.
That's right.
But at the same time, we do definitely, well, we know what's behind that. That it is, it's all politics and BS, you know?
Right.
At the end of the day.
Right.
But definitely, Brother Dashaun, tell us more about just what you have done on the terms of this case, because I know that you said, as you mentioned, you did mention that you was one of these one of the cases you was working on, correct?
Yeah. Well, actually, right now, what I did, and Sister Khadija has been very helpful. What I started to do, actually, what I did, I reached out to both attorneys, Kenneth Thompson and Jeffrey Shapiro, and I let them know specifically, I left a voicemail on Mr. Shapiro's. On Mr. Shapiro's voicemail, telling him
their name
who I
sounds
was,
familiar.
And I told him,
Shapiro.
I said, look,
yeah.
I said, because right now, just to let you know, her attorneys are hiding her from the media for very good reason.
Okay? Yeah, they should.
Definitely for very good reason. So when I called, I let them know I'm, you know, I'm from the Amsterdam News, and I'm not at all calling to attempt to demonize your client. I said I would like to give her a voice. Okay, I would like to give her a voice. Because, you know, right after that, I made an attempt to reach out to Dominique Strauss-Kahn's office, okay? But I mainly wanted to give her a voice, okay, without necessarily being opinionated. I wanted to get a statement from her or even her attorney. Okay, that's what I've done. This Thursday, I'll actually be covering the news conference in Manhattan. And then after that, I believe 3 hours later, Sister Khadija, you all will be at 153 Franklin Street.
Yeah, we'll be at his town, his plush townhouse.
Right, at his townhouse. I'll actually be covering the protest to bring attention to this case. Okay, I'll actually be covering the protest, but once again, I won't be there as a protester. I'll be there in the capacity of a journalist. So what I'm doing, like I said, right now, I'm trying to provide a voice for this sister. That's my thing. But like I said, you know, I plan on once again reaching out to Strauss-Kahn's office. But of course, he's not taking any statements from the, you know, he has some very good lawyers. He's not taking any statements. He's not making any statements to the press either.
If he had any sense, but I don't even understand why he would even offer his DNA. Like, you know, like you said, he must know. Like, I'm getting off. It's no way.
You know he's gonna get off. That's why.
Well, he thought he would get off. You have to understand is that, you know, you know, once again, he's a rich white man, powerful white man over the IMF. So, you know, his thing was, sure, here, take it. I'll just go back to France.
Right, that's it.
And what happens at the Khadija, the Port Authority police, you know, tapped him on the shoulder. Sir, can you come with us, please?
Right, that's it.
What time do you want to come in? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
More convenient for you.
Definitely.
Like, we get arrested.
I might add that Kenneth Thompson was on KISS FM here in New York, 98.7. I didn't hear it, but something kept telling me to turn it on, but I didn't turn on the radio that Sunday morning. But I was told that he was on KISS FM, and he was laying out the whole case. And he said that, you know, it was reported that he said that he would give his client a chance to come forth and tell her story, you know. But see, time is of the essence now. They met on Wednesday. We don't know what the outcome of that meeting was, and everybody's hush-hush, and we don't know anything.
Right.
So, I mean, that's why I feel such urgency that
we could jump on it.
Yeah, we have to move quickly. We have to really, really move quickly. So we want people to continue to call the DA's office. You know, it's also reported that Cyrus Vance, who is the DA, has had a string of defeats. There were two cops that were charged with rape. He prosecuted that case. He lost that. And I think there was another case. I forgot the other case. So, you know, and Kenneth Thompson feels that he's sabotaging this case because he's afraid that he's going to lose. And that makes a lot of sense once you think about it, because that's like, you know, that's like, it reminds me of like when you're at a job that you don't like.
Right.
And you don't really, really want to quit, but you do shit, so you do stuff so you can get fired. You know, so you can, you mess up so you can just get fired. That's what he's doing. You know, that's what Cyrus Vance is doing. Maybe subconsciously he's afraid to prosecute the case because of his past track record. He feels that he might, in fact, lose. But, I mean, in the interest of fairness.
You're not the only one to assert that, Sister Khadijah. Other people have said that in New York.
Yeah.
You're not the only one to make such an assertion.
Okay, well, so what's the more background of that? Because that also needs to be talked about as well. Break that down even more. Like, because a lot of our people, a lot of listening audiences are from New York. I know y'all know the politics and everything of what's going on, but everybody don't know about New York. So could y'all, like, break that down a little bit more as best as you can?
You mean in terms of his history, Cyrus Vance's history?
Exactly.
Well, you know, Cyrus Vance, he took over, I think it was in 2009, 2010, he took over from Robert Morgenthau, you know, who I felt was a very good district attorney. You know, he was old as the hills, but his mind was sharp. And this guy here, Cyrus Vance Jr., his father used to be the Secretary of State. I don't know if he was an attorney, but he used to be the Secretary of State,
mm-hmm.
his father, Cyrus Vance.
Mm-hmm.
So Cyrus Vance Jr., I don't think he's a new prosecutor. He's not a... You know, this is his first time being the DA of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. And so far he's had a couple of, defeats. And maybe, I don't know if he feels self-conscious about that and maybe he doesn't really want to, to move forward with the case. And I guess so when he saw all these inconsistencies with this alleged inconsistencies with the sister, he probably was like, you know, let me just quit now before I, before it blows up, you know, in my face because I already lost. You know, the cop case, it was two cops who was charged with rape, and he lost that. And it was another case, I can't remember what that case was. So, you know, so it seems like he has a couple of cases where he didn't do too good at. You know, he prosecuted, but he lost. So, you know, but this case here is a challenge. I think this is a legal challenge for him because he has to really, you know, he got to really look inside himself and say, listen, I need to prosecute this case because, you know, no matter what she said, no matter what she may have lied about her asylum application, that DNA evidence, see, that's the thing that keeps me up at night, that DNA evidence is all over her shirt, and it's on the carpet. It's reported that it's on the carpet in the room, you know, and it doesn't matter that, you know, it's reported that she may be pulled up on perjury charges because,
right.
Which I think is really grasping at straws in the dark because she told the prosecutors, that first she reported it to a supervisor immediately, and then she changed the story and said that she cleaned two rooms before she decided to report it. Now,
right.
Based on those two things, you mean to tell me you would put perjury charges on somebody because of that? We have to understand the mindset of a person that's gone through stuff like that. Some people, especially African people, African women, we've been raped, and we just get up and keep cutting the sugar cane like it ain't nothing. That's how we process stuff. That's how we, you know, that's how... We've done it in the past, so it's not. I don't think it's unusual. I don't think it's so deceptive that she would go ahead and do that. She probably said, "Okay, let me get myself together. Now, what am I going to do now? This thing just happened to me. Maybe if I try to occupy myself and clean this room, then I'll report it." You know, so people don't understand the mindset of a person that goes through a horrific situation like that. So.
But you know what else I think is kind of crazy? Do you know they nicknamed this dude the Great Seducer?
The Great Seducer?
Yeah, that ought to tell you something right there. That ought to tell you something, okay?
Exactly.
Once again, we're going to say again, and I'm not at all saying that he's guilty. I'm not saying he's innocent, but nearly 10 years ago, that woman, in his hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that French woman, she came forward just the other day. So they
right.
called him the Great Seducer.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I believe allegations went in May when he was first arrested. There already were allegations around. I heard that term, the Great Seducer, back then before this woman came. The other woman came forward.
Okay.
About his alleged relationships with women, his inappropriate contact.
Right. So
his wife is basically like she feels like he is innocent. That would You know what I mean? They're always just like, they always feel like they're innocent, and then once, you know, they get brought up on those charges or they're dropped or whatever, then they're getting a divorce. That's what customarily happens in these types of cases. But
that
needs to be talked about as well. I mean, what is his, I mean, his whole, I mean, does he have maids in his, you know, in his house? If so, you know, they need to go and talk to them.
Right,
I know this is the first time he's done. I mean, again, like we already know this. Obviously, this isn't the first time. I mean, just two people have came forward. But we need to have some more people come forward in these cases. Maybe we need to put out a bulletin hotline or something, you know, to find more people that are victims and immigrants that may be afraid to say anything, because this has to be really exposed to the fullest extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Bill Perkins, one of the city councilmen here in New York, he did a press conference here yesterday, and he brought up a very good point. He said that if these charges are dropped against Dominique Strauss-Kahn, that can send a message to other women, who, especially women from other countries. My concern primarily is women of African descent from other countries, who, if they go through stuff like that, they would be hesitant to report it, because they would be like, well, shit, you know, I don't think I put B on the application instead of A, and they may think I'm lying, so maybe I shouldn't come forth with this sexual charge. You know, I mean, this sends a negative message to women out there, especially women, you know, of African descent or women from the continent. They may think twice about coming forth. So there's so many dynamics to this that you know, why we have to really, like, push forth on this and give the sisters support, because this sets the tone for other situations that could come down the line, you know, so... This is like, I mean, because when I saw that they listed that house arrest on him, and I saw him walking out the courthouse with that smug look on his face, I said, this MF, you know, as Dr. Khalidi used to say, the IMF and the other MF. I said, this MF.
I'm well aware of those names. But, yes,
he's walking out here like it ain't nothing. I said, this can't happen. I said, this is not going down. Nah, that's what I call it.
Then check this out. Now, you know, the, like, reports are just really leaking out. You know, he's like close ties with George Bush, the president, well, the so-called president of the United States.
That's been for a few years.
He's at Camp David, you know, on Saturday, chilling with him.
That's been for a few years.
You mean to tell me that a person that is convicted of a crime, so they roll together like that? They hang together, and they don't even try to keep it secret. They just outright let you know that we don't care. This is how we get down. They just let you know about that.
Oh,
you
really?
Know,
is that
how
right?
Friends
okay.
they are. So they are. They're friends.
Interesting. Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that needs to be talked about as well. It's a lot of stuff that's like so deep on this issue. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that, you know, you're hanging out. You're supposed to be a president of the United States, an ex-president, and you feel just so comfortable. You're okay with hanging out with someone that allegedly raped a victim, raped an immigrant that's legally, that's in this country, you know.
And charged
and
indicted,
too. Yeah, exactly. So what are we teaching the people?
Right. Exactly.
What are you teaching the people? Aren't you supposed to be an example for the so-called American citizens of this country?
I don't know about that. I'm just saying
for them. You know,
that's something to think about.
And you said, did you say that she would be calling in at 21 from a 212 number?
She should be calling from a 240 number.
240. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't think that she's called in yet, because I really want to get her on here so she can talk about that other case, because that's another thing that needs to expose. So do we have any more information up on, these cops and that kind of thing? I know we're going back and forth on both cases, but again, like you made a point, both cases are irrelevant. The fact that they were immigrants, you know what I mean, that closely ties them in together, and by the fact of it being on the East Coast at the same time, so that should be exposed. And then it does goes against, you know, goes upon the 10-point program of the New Black Panther Party as well, about police brutality. You know, this excessive force, that's beyond excessive force, if we can say, we can definitely say that. But on the terms of then raping and all of that, you know, we're definitely against that. So that needs to be talked about on the terms of, do we have any more information, Dashaun? Brother Dashaun, do you have any information upon this incident that happened in 1999.
No, you mean 2000. Oh, you're talking about what? Amadou Diallo?
Yes, sir. It would happen 1999.
That actually, I have the same information that Sister Khadija has. You know, the brother was unarmed. Four Caucasians that popped out of a vehicle saying, "Hold it right there," something to, you know, "Hold it right there," and they didn't identify.
So they
themselves
say they said it. They claim
right,
that they said that. Yeah.
And then they didn't even have like uniform. I know that they didn't have uniform.
No,
I know that they were. You know what I mean? They didn't have no badge, none of that.
Well, that's my point. They didn't identify themselves as police officers.
Right.
That's my point. You know, and you know, I'm gonna tell you how you just see four dudes jumping out of a vehicle. Hold it right there. You know, think about
right.
it. So when they asked for his identification, he was reaching for his wallet, and they shot him 41 times. You know, that happened in,
yeah.
February
1999.
And the ironic thing, the insult was this. They all got acquitted Black History Month the next year, February 2000. I was still an undergrad.
Right, right. And then not only that, but one of them they applied for FDNY. And I don't know if one of them, I think they're working as a firefighter now, you know what I'm
wow.
saying? Kenneth Boss, yeah,
really?
That's his name, Kenneth Boss, yeah. He applied with FDNY.
I would tell him he probably would never save any black lives. He probably
yeah.
would let them all burn.
Well,
yeah.
New York City,
that kind of stuff has to be exposed, too. So, I mean, his rights, like, he should never be able to apply for any type of government, even if he wasn't evicted. I mean, not evicted. What am I talking about? Convicted of his crime. He should never even be allowed to serve in any state capacity because he doesn't obviously like black people.
Hold on. You have to understand it. You have to look at it this way, okay? There's no value placed on black life. So killing Negroes is all right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
There's no value. Mm-hmm. However, when white folks start getting killed by the police and getting snatched out of their vehicles, then police brutality.
Human rights are violated. Right.
Right, exactly.
Black rights are clearly violated.
Mm-hmm.
All this huff and puff, and then they get laws changed.
Right,
they'll
right.
get laws changed. I mean, it's not even a minute. Laws get changed with them.
Right.
You know
and
what I mean?
Actually put in their name, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
that's right.
Yeah, it, definitely in their name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I
yeah.
understand. Then they call him the... I'm just getting more information upon the Sunday Times, and the Sunday Times don't help this case even more. I don't know if their goal is not to or to help this case of the sister that was raped. That's not even helping the case. They're leasing more information, saying that honestly that they call him the one night stand angry husband.
Can I ask you a question? What paper was this that you mentioned?
The Sunday Times.
Okay. Just checking.
Yes, sir. The Sunday Times, and this report that they did. You know, about him was in 2008. So that really, I mean, he has a history, not just a side of the rape, but of womanizing. You know
yeah,
what I mean? And
yeah.
how can he run a country if he's a womanizer? How can he be sympathetic to any woman as a president and you're a womanizer?
That's what I was saying. You know, he already had that history. Or when I say history, he had already had a history of being accused of that. We're still talking about Khan,
exactly.
right? Okay,
exactly.
Yes, he had that. He already
yeah.
had accused, you know, several years before.
Exactly. He has eons years and
yeah, yeah.
reports and reports and reports.
You know,
but yeah,
you know,
he's still in a position where he could roam freely within this country and still be,
right.
you know, patted
right.
on the back.
Yeah, he's free to move about.
And you know and that in and of itself, you know, that's a slap in the face too. That's a slap in the face to our sister also because, you know, they're saying, look, you did what you did. Your DNA evidence is all over her uniform, but yet you can just, you know, it's okay. You know, I'll lift your house arrest. I'll give you back your $5 million bail and your $1 million cash, whatever it is, it's one, you know, the reverse. And then the same night he goes out to an Italian restaurant, enjoys himself. You know, like it's almost like he's a sociopath. He has no conscience.
How much was his bail again, Queen? Say that again. I didn't hear.
Yeah.
How much?
Yes, it's like he's a sociopath because he doesn't care. You know,
right after he, you know, allegedly
made
oral sex on him, he left the hotel. Mm-hmm. Then he goes and has, it's reported that he had dinner with his daughter. And then he gets on a plane to get ready to go to Paris, like it's nothing, you know. So maybe the man has a sociopathic personality where the sociopathic personality, that they have a defect in the superego, which
they rules
over our conscience.
They call it narcissistic.
Yeah, it rules over our conscience. You know, it's a defect in that part of our psychological growth and development where we just don't care. I mean, we could do shit like that and then just go and have lunch after it like it's nothing. You know, it's like,
my problem is, you know. So how much was his bail and he put all that up front? How much was it again? I'm sorry.
It was on $5 million bond
$5
and $1 million.
We don't have none of our stuff paid for. We can't get any school programs. We can't get our own schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, all the streets like really bad in New York. I mean, you know what I mean? All this money. Where is this all these tax dollars going? And where, you know, all this bail money? Where is this all going? That's why we need to talk about that too. That also needs to be exposed. Where is all this money going? Why is the government still the so-called United States in debt? And why does Africa have to still pay, you know, money? Why are they in debt? You know what I mean?
Well,
all this money coming
debt.
Up.
Africa is in debt because of the International Monetary Fund.
That's right.
These are things that should be discussed. Where are all these tax dollars going? Not just tax dollars, but where are all this bail money going? Is bail money... this, you know, all of this money that they're getting and that they're stealing. I mean, where is it all going?
Good question. He got his money back too. He's a big corporation. He got $6 million. He got all that back. You know, got all of that back. And that's what's slapping in the face of the system. Like, you know, your life don't mean nothing. We don't care. You know, we're gonna blame you. We're going to use you as an excuse to drop the charges, and you're the victim. You know, I mean, every time I think about that, it's something
backwards.
That's so unbalanced about that. That's backwards, right. It's backwards, it's unbalanced, and it's like, yeah, he's got to pay. He just got to pay. That's it. He has to pay for what he did, so.
Yeah, we need to really, I just want you to, again, break down, like, what do you need people to do, again, for those that are just now tuning in? Because we have 15 more minutes for the radio show. So I definitely want you to really just tell
what you need people to do
and go from there.
Well, for brothers and sisters all over the country that may be listening, we want you to, especially the continental African brothers and sisters that are all over the country, because we're everywhere, and we want the Ghanaian community in particular to call the DA's office. The DA's name is Cyrus Vance Jr., Cyrus Robert Vance Jr., in fact. And he is the Manhattan District Attorney in Manhattan, and his telephone number is 212-335-9000. And we want continental Africans all over this country, in particular Ghanaians, we want them to call the DA's office and demand that the case be brought to trial. We demand that Daniel Alonzo and whoever else in the DA office to stop leaking out information about our sister, and that you take the case to trial, and that you do not drop the charges, period, that you do not do that. And we want continental Africans all over the country who may be listening to do that. So the people, like the brothers and sisters, the Africans here in this country, we want them to mobilize our African continental brothers and sisters to call. And we don't care if you speak in Tulani or if you speak in Wolof. It doesn't matter. You don't have to feel self-conscious about your English or whatever. Call the DA's office and demand that the case be brought to trial. And also in New York, this Thursday, the 14th, July 14th, we will be at the DA's office at 1 Hogan Place, and we will have a press conference there at 12 noon. Mm-hmm. And at 6 p.m. that evening, we will go to the house of Dominic, the plush townhouse of Dominic Strauss-Kahn at 153 Franklin Street. And we will have a rally in front of his townhouse. So this is how we could, you know, put pressure. Call the DA's office. Call the DA's office. And don't worry about if you have
get
to talk
number,
to anybody. It's 212-335-9000. 212-335-9000. And Brother Dashaun, if you're still on, I think you may have Kenneth Thompson's telephone number. People should call
her attorney as well, the sister's attorney as well. I don't have it at the ready here, but Darshan, if you have it,
I'm currently away from my office right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently away from my office. I have my number there, and since the show's about to go off, I don't think I have enough time to go back on the computer.
What we can do is we can post that on the Facebook, number one. And number two, I think on Wednesday night.
Oh, it's right here. I have it.
Go ahead.
For Kenneth P. Thompson. He's the attorney for our sister, and the telephone number is 212-257-6800. 212-257-6800, and that's for attorney Kenneth P. Thompson.
Don't forget, as well, tell them that there's only, tell them Jeffrey Shapiro. Believe it or not, there's only one named Jeffrey Shapiro who's an attorney in New York City. But if you're able to, you go to his website, it's also, actually, I'm not going to mention every code, but I'm sure right now Kenneth Thompson is a more reliable number since I don't have Mr. Shapiro's number.
Yeah, he's the lead attorney. I don't know how many people are on her team, but Kenneth Thompson is the lead attorney, so that's what's reported at least. So
we definitely need to do that. We need to really expose that. We need that sister to tell about her son, because that is like really important. If we can get more people to call in reference to citizen board review boards. And we also need people that are victims of police brutality, because we need to really touch on that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you all know of any, definitely have them, my telephone number so we could, really get that.
We can do that. Yeah.
But do you all have any other final words before we end this?
One thing I just want to say, especially to our continental brothers and sisters who may be listening, excuse me, that you have a right to stand up and say no and to resist. That you can do that. It's okay. You have a right to say I don't like what it is that you're doing, and I think it's wrong. If there's anything about this country, at least you could do that. And a lot of our brothers and sisters, they want to come over here, from the continent, and they come over here by any means, any way they have to come over here. And we want them to understand that when you come over here, that it's okay for you to stand up and say, I don't like that, and that we resist that. And if you feel funny about, your English or whatever, you speak in your language. Everybody else speaks in the language that they feel comfortable in, so surely you should be able to do the same thing. So that's one final note that I want to leave, especially with my continental, brothers and sisters. And for the Africans here in this country, we know what the deal is. We want you to teach our African brothers and sisters from the continent, teach them, and we need to take them under our wing and teach them that they can stand up and that they can say no, and that they object, to injustice. So, and we have an obligation to do that because we know here, the Africans here in this country, we know. We know what it is over here, so that's our obligation to teach them that.
But here's the thing, though, sis. Now, for people that are wanting to join with you all, join with you to help to organize, because I know the brother said he's going to be, reporting. So, so if you could possibly give them your contact information so they'll know, they might get lost. I don't know. They might be coming from out of town. But
well,
if you
sure.
information, that would be nice.
Yes, ma'am. All right, my name is Khadija Shakur, and my cell number is 347-597-3518. And please feel free to call me. I keep my phone on all day, all night. You can call me anytime you want. 347-597-3518.
Okay. Brother Dashan, do you have any other closing words?
No, I'll just see you out there on Thursday.
All right.
But unfortunately,
okay, well,
he doesn't like speaking to the press, so I'll be taking my recorder elsewhere on that day.
Yes, sir. All right, I understand.
That's fine. Well, I do appreciate both of you all calling in today and definitely
thank you for having us.
We will give you full support upon this matter.
It's going to be a requirement that people post this on their Facebook, because this is definitely a necessary issue. Because if it was someone else's family member or someone you knew, then you would definitely want people to do something about it. And we just can't stand, no matter what part of continent, you know, you are on, the fact that you are our brother and our sister, you know,
yes.
We have to stand up on this subject matter. But again, I do want to thank you all for coming on, and I feel you Black Power.
All right, Black Power, thank you for having us.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you. Thank you, Hotel.
All right, Hotel. Okay, anyway, brothers and sisters, again, thank you so much for calling in today. Of course, if you want to join the organization of the New Black Panther Party, or you want to help with the Day of Action, the national chairman would kill me if I didn't mention this. But it's National Day of Action at yahoo.com. The definite information, the telephone number to reach, I'll give you two numbers to reach to get into the New Black Panther Party, or just be a supporter and to help and assist the Day of Action, et cetera, would be 502-299-8530 or 314-327-5222. And also to get more information upon to email to join the organization or support it as well, let me give you that contact email address. You know how we do. It's nbpphq@yahoo.com. Again, I want to thank everybody for calling in and offer your support. Please, brothers and sisters, don't wait to the last minute. I know a lot of us like to procrastinate, but we really have to get on top of these things because it definitely is an effect. It shows that it can affect any one of us, and it can happen to your mother, your cousin, your sister, and we have to really stand up. And I'm not trying to just say because it's women's rights, but it's just a Black woman should be definitely protected. Hell, I want to be protected. I want to be protected from things like this, and I want my sisters and my daughters to be protected from these types of things from happening. It's been happening to us for centuries. And during, at some parts and some development, we have to stand up. We couldn't really stand up a whole lot during slavery. Well, some of us tried to, and we were murdered off. But now is the time for us to definitely stand up, shut up, or put up, or really just leave this fight for us. If you're not going to stand up for your sisters, your mothers, your daughters, or anybody like that, and you don't give a damn, then you know what? You should be held accountable, because you're just as much a rapist yourself if you don't stand up for our sisters. We are nothing. You know what I mean? The Black woman should always be protected at all times, at all costs. We can't continue to fail the Black woman. We can't continue to keep doing this, brothers and sisters. We can't keep not honoring our sisters, because it's just not going to help us to, you know, advance and anymore. We're not going to be able to advance. How many times do we have to constantly go through this and constantly have to happen and wait and watch ourselves being raped? We're being raped already in the school system, you know, on a mental level. We're being raped in some of these churches and mosques and different things that are not empowering us the way that we do. It's a form of rape. We all have to be able to stand up. And if we don't, then we are just as much responsible. We are just as much a party to this if we don't stand up and do something about it. But again, we thank you so much for tuning in. We thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Again, thanks for calling in to Black Power Radio. Make sure you tune in on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 646-478-4447. Thanks for calling in, Black Power.